WFAE Talks.
I have acknowledged being guilty of accepting monies for constituent services, something that should never have been done while serving in elected office.
You think? That, of course, is former Charlotte Mayor Patrick Cannon. He emerged from the federal courthouse this week after pleading guilty to a political corruption charge and spoke for the first time since he was arrested in March on multiple corruption and bribery charges, at least spoke publicly for the first time. We're going to be spending most of this week's show talking about Cannon. We'll also have our second installment of the Mega Meter. I'm Greg Collard, news director at WFAE. Joining me is reporter Ben Bradford.
Hey, what's going on?
ready to put the week away already.
Yeah, that's right.
It's been a busy week.
It has. We got jumped early Monday morning with more Patrick Cannon.
Yes, the gift that keeps on giving.
I guess.
It depends how you look at it. Mm-hmm. All right. Lisa Miller decided to take a day off, so joining us for the first time is Sneem Sharma, since she, along with Ben, covered Cannon's court appearance this week. That's your height of journalism achievement, I assume, coming on the show?
Yes, definitely.
Great. Well, first, before we talk about Patrick Cannon, let's hear a little bit more from him.
Finally, I want to express my appreciation to my family and friends, to my legal counsel, the faith community, and to the many people whose expressions of unconditional love and support have been and continue to be sources of strength and encouragement.
Thank you. Sir, why did you do it?
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad that you've got that in there. Thanks for that.
That, of course, was Ben Bradford asking, so why'd you do it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've asked him a really simple question, right? Because if you listen to or read that statement, the one thing that it doesn't address is, I mean, you know, granted, we could probably, you know, guess why, right? I mean, you know, money is mm-hmm. is money, and you know, there's it's probably nice to have an extra, you know, 50 to 70 grand mm-hmm. in your pocket. But basically what had happened is the lawyers had kind of walled him off and had said he's going to read this statement. And then they'd asked, and they're like, yeah, and then he's not going to take any questions. So, you know, but at the same time, you know, our job as reporters is to ask those questions. And I think that's really, you know, if you were to talk to him, and you were to want to ask Cannon something, right? I think that my question would be, you know, why do it? Like, how does that start, right? What's the what are you thinking when you decide to do that? Are you know, and is this something where, I mean, obviously we know there's, you know, kind of those age old adages, right? Power corrupts, you know, absolute power corrupts mm-hmm. absolutely, and so forth. And I'm not saying that Cannon had absolute power. We've talked very much about how limited the mayor and the city council's power is. But, you know, I mean, how does that happen? Is this something where, you know, people kind of think that they're untouchable at a certain point? This is that they're not going to get caught on these things? Or, and so just wanted to hear, you know, wanted to ask that question and find out if we could get an answer, not without expecting an answer, obviously, without mm-hmm. expecting an answer, but at least take a shot, see if we're going to get something from that.
There is something a little ridiculous about asking us not to ask questions.
Oh, it's absurd. Well, particularly in that kind of circumstance. I mean, this is not a, you know, later on that day, I walked over to the U.S. Attorney's office and they were having a press conference. And they told us beforehand they're not. It's an ongoing investigation. They're not going to take any more questions. They're not going to take any questions. So this is a, you know, sort of a coordinated, orchestrated appearance. Mm-hmm. And so you know the rules going in that that's going to be the case. You know, as opposed to Cannon, he's showing up in court for a federal appearance. He knows he's going to be there. You know, he's out in public. It's hard for to say that you're gonna limit what somebody mm-hmm. can ask him in public. Now, with that said, of course, he has the right to not answer, which is what he did. He looked at me and he kind of nodded and then backed up, and then all the TV people just chased him.
I mean, the fact that he even had a prepared statement was a big thing.
That's right. Yeah, it's the first time that he's talked at all. And actually, Tazneem, you saw him. You saw him come in. So what had happened was I was inside and Tazneem was outside waiting mm-hmm. to. Try to get something from him, get some answer from him.
Yeah, we decided to get there at 10:30 and then basically staked out the courthouse. So I stayed outside and I was there with all of the media waiting for him to appear. And maybe right at 10:45, which is when his court appearance was scheduled to start. A black SUV pulls up, and like all of the camera crews and the reporters run towards it. But it circles around, and it tries to, like, it. So it seems like they're trying to go through the back entrance to avoid the media. Mm-hmm. But then it comes back, and then the car door opens, and as soon as it opens, like, you know, he's bombarded, and eventually also, like, on his way into the courthouse, he trips and falls, which we weren't expecting, but.
We saw that on TV, and we were wondering. We saw you, and then we didn't see you, and we were wondering if he tripped over you.
I heard that he tripped over, because I was inside, obviously. I didn't see it. I heard it was over some cameraman, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw him fall. I mean, basically, it had to do with the bench and the positioning of, like, the camera people, like, moving around him. And so, and then he had to be, like, pulled back up, and they're like, you know, are you all right?
Who helped him up? Was it, did reporters help him up, or was it his own people?
It wasn't that close, but I did see him fall.
I always think, like, in general, though, you know, it's like while we're talking about sort of the coverage of this, I mean, that question of, you know, what do you ask people? I mean, you know, when is it, you know, part of reporting is sort of a, it's sort of a professional rudeness. And I feel like in my private life, and I think all of us here except Greg, in our private lives,
okay, what are you gonna say here?
are fairly polite people.
Okay. And that's fair.
And I think, you know, it's, and you've got to put some of that aside, because your job is to ask people uncomfortable questions, and your job is to kind of seek that stuff out. And but I, you know, the media swarm, you know, those swarms that you see, you know, in front, you know, with the cameras all pointed at somebody and rushing around somebody, yeah, and even blocking them. It's a really uncomfortable thing.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I mean, like, you kind of feel like you're a vulture.
Yeah, and you've got to decide, like, when is it appropriate to do that, and when does it just, like, you know, when does it not matter? I think you sort of weigh, you know, somebody's kind, yeah, of, see, Greg's looking at me weird because doesn't do this. He just headbutts everybody and sticks his microphone in their face. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, this is a major political figure.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The leader of our city, so.
Right, exactly. Former. So you sort of give up. We feel like, you know, you give up a certain amount of your privacy when you take that and when you do something like that.
I was thinking of one incident. This is a little bit off topic, in Logan County, or had to do with the former sheriff of Logan County, West Virginia, years ago. He coming out of a federal courthouse, just pleaded guilty, and some media is following him as he's walking away. And in my microphone, I asked him some question like you did, and he turned around and burped in my microphone. I'm not kidding you.
Disgusting.
And I aired that. So anyway,
I mean, well, you want to add any detail you can to.
It's true. So, Zazim, what, as you're waiting outside there, what's the mood? I mean, is it kind of, sometimes it can be, reporters can be a little bit goofy waiting outside.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about basically how he fell, who tripped him, trying to entertain themselves, basically. And, like, they would, like, prank each other and say, oh, he's coming, or...
they're faking each other out.
Or like, basically, we were all focused on one of the courthouse doors to the federal courthouse. And every time a person would come out, so like there were some journalists who would come out just to, like, I guess, prank everyone and keeping ourselves entertained until, which felt kind of silly. And I mean,
it does start to feel silly. I know.
Yeah,
what you mean.
And I have to say, I didn't participate in it. But yeah, so when he finally did come out, he was, like, very remorseful. And I mean, the fact that he did have a prepared statement was a big deal. I guess I wasn't exactly expecting that. But then, you know, they were prepared, and he even had, his lawyer had copies to distribute to the media.
Right. And when I came outside, there was actually a metal kind of portable podium that was set up with the microphones and everything. So who set that up?
It was the Time Warner Cable folks. I mean, they figured that they were going to try to get him to say something at the very least. And we really didn't give him an option. Like, there were, like, tripods, like, blocking the front entrance. Like, he had to get past us. So
inside, talk a little bit about what it was like inside the courthouse.
Sure.
And when he came through the doors, did you look around, or were there friends and family there?
It turns out that federal court is a really depressing place. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was talking to you about this earlier this week after having been in there. I think a lot of times we get caught up in sort of you know, it's the mayor. He did this, you know, pretty incredible thing. There was a huge investigation about it, and it just, you know, I think we get sort of caught up in that narrative of it, and sort of in you know, kind of watching that stuff happen. It's fascinating. All right, so I'm in the courtroom. The judge is in there, and he's going through a series of these hearings. There were, I think, four before Cannon showed up, and every time it was a black man in an orange jumpsuit with chains on who would come up, and a public defender would sit down next to them, and you know, and whisper in their ear, and that process was repeated. And I think that the first two, most of them were drug related. I think one was a mail fraud case. And you just see, I mean, you know, in one case there was a man who it was a drug case. He'd been charged with possession of cocaine with intent to distribute. And his mother is sitting in the, and actually his entire family is sitting. They call his mother up to the stand to testify that she'll take him, and that basically arguing that until he is sentenced, until the trial, he can stay with his mother, and that if he does that, he can be with his daughter, who they're trying to prove that he's a very conscientious father, and he can stay with the mother, and that'll keep him out of trouble, and so forth, and so. You know, and this is very deliberate. They take their time with this, and after both the federal prosecutors who are arguing that he should be held in custody until basically be in jail until the next hearing, the judge takes his time and looks over it, and then it's just you know one word, detained, and mm-hmm. they take him off away. And so, you know, I think that's really sobering. You know, there's this whole spectacle of, you know, of Patrick Cannon and all of us reporters out there, and, you know, kind of waiting for him to show up. And there's this excitement for this guy who, you know, we haven't seen essentially since the news came out, right? Mm-hmm. One day he was mayor and the next day he was gone. I think there's this whole sort of excitement to see him. And there's this and then in court, I mean, to me at least, it was just, I'm not sure I'm being especially articulate here, mm-hmm. but. It's just there's something it sort of, you know, reminds you, oh yeah, this is just sort of the human element mm-hmm. of it, I guess. And just there's something just, you know, it's extremely, in addition to being, you know, this kind of crazy thing, it's just also extremely sad.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something very stark. I mean, even beyond that, there was something very stark about, you know, these men in jumpsuits and chains.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and we alluded to this in my story that I did afterward. And then, you know, Patrick Cannon comes in, walking in as a free man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously he's had his passport taken away, he's under bond and so forth, but walks in with his lawyers,
right.
You know, wearing a suit, whereas, you know, everybody else has walked out wearing, you know, a jumpsuit and chains.
And the craziest thing is that he still has supporters and people who think right. that
so
he's
you
not guilty.
Some people tell about that.
Yeah. So there's one guy that I was talking to, and apparently he owns a bunch of real estate locally, and he says, like, you know, he approached Cannon on multiple occasions and asked for help, and Cannon never asked for money. And they've had, like, a 20-year-long relationship. Like, he never suspected anything.
He's just convinced that he didn't do it, or he couldn't have done that.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you know, right. like, we can't take the official word
right,
as
despite
the official
the
word.
Fact that he's pleaded guilty to
yeah.
it as well. And, yeah.
Yeah.
And then did you talk to him before his statement or after?
Before his statement.
So it would be interesting to see what he thought after his statement when he was admitted to taking monies or whatever his exact statement was.
Right, but he wasn't the only one either. There was
definitely a crowd.
Right, yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Huh. Well, I guess before we get on to the mega meter here, just looking forward, obviously this case is going ahead. We can assume that he is naming names
we know
he is
cooperating.
That's
part of his plea agreement, is that he's cooperating. And one of the things that was interesting being in the courtroom was that the federal prosecutors wanted him back out on bond as opposed to, you know, being detained until his sentencing, which is the next step. And they wanted him out on bond because they said it'd be easier to access him so that he can continue to help with this investigation.
Did it feel like being a mayor still has its privileges in a way?
Oh, you know, I don't know about that. I don't know enough about the about how
just because the type of crime work. And all that.
I will say that it seems pretty apparent, and I don't think, again, I don't think this is a particularly, you know, a huge revelation or anything like that, but I think that the privileges of money were very apparent in that mm-hmm. courtroom. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of people that I saw getting up there, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine sure. if they had money for legal counsel, and you know, I mean, we know that things obviously work out differently when that's the case.
Right. More stories to come on this. So who knows? And maybe come in Monday morning, we'll be hit with more breaking news on this. We've responded well. Proud of how the staff reacted. And you two did some excellent coverage of that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So, well, on to the next topic. This is the second installment of the Mega Meter, named after Megan Stubel. She works at our front desk and is a former paralegal. Each week, we're asking her to take a look at some of the emails, many of them ridiculous, we get from candidates this election season. Our focus has been on the U.S. Senate race. And last week, Megan addressed charges in a state Republican Party press release concerning Kay Hagan. This week's assignment is a press release from the campaign of Kay Hagan. Let's hear from Megan.
All right, so issues of veterans care are obviously a hot political topic right now with the ongoing investigation of the Department of Veterans Affairs. And in their ongoing Senate race, Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis are both firing shots at one another on the issue. They're each alleging that the other does not support North Carolina's veterans or their best interests. On Wednesday, Hagan's camp issued a press release in this week's ridiculous email that was titled, "Would Tom Tillis Have Blocked Critical Funding for VA?"
Ooh, would he have blocked critical funding for the VA? Does Tom Tillis care about veterans?
Ah, that is an excellent question. Kay Hagan seems to think, no, he does not. The critical funding here was a large VA funding bill, which went before the Senate earlier this year and which she supported. What Hagan wants her supporters to be asking, though, is how would Tom Tillis have voted on this critical bill? Her email claims Tillis has repeatedly dodged this question and therefore cannot be trusted to support our veterans and their interests. My issue here is that this is a completely hypothetical scenario. The bill was before the Senate in February and died on a procedural vote of 56 to 41, where 60 votes were needed for the bill to proceed. Again, Hagan supported the bill, while senior Senator Richard Burr voted nay. So even if he, or in the imaginary scenario, Tom Tillis, had supported it, it still wouldn't have passed.
So on the Mega Meter, how does this score?
I'm going to give this a 2, category 2, because, again, it's just a sensational headline, and the logic is clearly flawed.
There you go, the second installment of the Mega Meter, Mega 2. Last week, she gave it a Mega 4 on the state Republican Party press release. This week, a Mega 2, mainly because she just thought it was a stupid comparison to make. I don't know, just dumb, but it wasn't an outright lie or anything like that. So did you pay attention to that press release at all that we got?
No,
did
I didn't even see it.
We get it, yeah.
I didn't even see it.
A lot of these we just ignore. Right. Yeah, because they're stupid and they're really not, there's no point in, but now yeah. We have a point in paying attention to them. Because we got the Mega Meter.
We can forward them along to get our in-house analysis.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you remember that one?
I don't.
All right. So you wonder, yeah, it makes you, why do they send them out to? I mean, who does give these publicity or give these press releases any attention?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. A lot of this stuff gets repackaged. You know, it becomes a press release, and then it goes into an email blast out to supporters. And I think these are the kind of things that get supporters fired up. I think that these are things that you try to you want other outlets. You want sort of, you know, if you're Kay Hagan, you want your very liberal outlets and your sort of grassroots outlets. Your things like Truth Out and Fire Dog Lake and things like that. You want them to pick it up. And on the other side, you know, Tillis wants the conservative outlets. He wants to show up on the on the Drudge Report and on some of the on the some of the other ones. And you know, and then you want to carry through there into your mainstream media.
All right, you heard the music and you stopped.
I did.
You didn't have to stop so fast.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
So, Sneem, thanks for joining us this week. It was enjoyed having you on.
Yeah, hope to have
you
on again.
All right. And Ben, all right. This is number 20, by the way.
Number 20, wow. Okay. Yep. All right. Get less articulate by the week. All right.